Today we're going to learn a talk by the Rebbe. The truth is we're not going to read every single line, and I'll explain why. But we're going to learn the concept, the idea, most of the ideas brought down in this talk. This talk actually was delivered 1960, Parshas Vayeshev, which is the Parsha of this week. Vayeshev basically starts the story of Yosef, and we find it's one of the most interesting characters in the whole Torah, Yosef. So many things to learn with him, from him, so many things. But today we're going to dwell on the dreams that Yosef had, and we're going to see how these dreams can give us a very powerful and important lesson in our service to God. If I had to summarize all the talk, which is not so long, whatever, if I had to summarize everything in just one word, it would be the word avoda. We have to work on ourselves. That's the whole point. Of course, a person can ask, what's the work? And we will see a few details about this with more or less deepness, so to speak. But let's start. Let's start. First of all, just to recall, to know what we're talking about, the dreams. What are the dreams that Yosef actually dreamt? So these are two verses, two different places. And here is the source, so to speak. So Yosef dreamed two dreams in this particular parsha, and he describes the two dreams in very specific words. We're going to learn about this. And he basically repeats the two dreams, but with different words and different issues on the dream. Let's see. There we were, he and his brothers, binding sheaves. They were in the field. They were like gathering sheaves in the field. When suddenly my sheaf stood up and remained upright, he's saying, I'm going to be the king. Then he's talking to his brothers, your sheaves gathered around and bowed low down, whatever, to my sheaf. This is dream number one, Yosef dreams. Everybody's bowing down to him, even though he was not the oldest brother. His brothers had many, many problems with him. And Yosef basically saying, everybody's going to bow down to me. The second dream, he dreamed another dream and told his brothers, saying, look, I have another dream. And he told them, and this time the sun, the moon, which actually represent father and mother. Mother passed away already, so it was talking about Bila. That's how Rashi explains that actually raised Yosef. But the sun and the moon and 11 stars, his brothers, are bowing down to me. So again, everybody bows down to me. These are the true dreams that Yosef dreams. Everybody is bowing down to him. So we're going to compare these two dreams with other two dreams that actually appeared in Parshas Miketz, in a few Parshas. The Torah says like this, Pharaoh, he dreams two dreams, pretty similar dreams, but very different in many ways. And this is what we're going to dwell upon on this talk. Let's see what the verses do say. These are many verses put together in order to make it easier. After 2 years, 2 years' time, Pharaoh dreamed that he was standing by the Nile. This is going to be an important detail, you will see. When out of the Nile, there came up seven cows. I'm not going to dwell on the details of Pharaoh's dream. Seven fat cows, everything was nice. Seven bad cows, ugly, gaunt, whatever, cows. And the ugly cows actually ate the good cows, the fat cows. Okay, dream number one. I'm not going to read the whole thing. You can read the verse by yourself. That was dream number one. Dream number two, he fell asleep and dreamed a second time. So the same night, he dreamed one dream, and he was like bothered by the dream. He woke up, and then he went back to sleep, and he dreamed another dream the same night. 7 ears of grain, solid and healthy, basically the same dream. And seven bad, whatever, ears of grain came up and ate the good grain and so on. And there was a dream. These are the dreams of Yosef, going back, and then the dreams of Pharaoh. Now the Rebbe asks basically two very, very simple questions. First of all, why two dreams? We see both dreams by Yosef and by Pharaoh basically at the same thing. Basically, very basically, the same dream. Everybody bows down to me, says Yosef. And Pharaoh says, I don't understand, seven good things, seven bad things. And even Rashi in his commentary to Mark Parshas Miketz in the dreams of Pharaoh, he brings quite a few explanations that the people of Pharaoh, our sages say in the Midrash, people of Pharaoh wanted to give to Pharaoh. You're going to have seven daughters and they're going to die, whatever, seven good things, seven bad things. Nobody really got the message of the dream until Yosef came in Parshas Miketz and explained the dreams of Pharaoh. So now, why two dreams? In the case of Pharaoh, we do have an explanation of why two dreams. Actually, Yosef does say clearly why two dreams. Yosef says, as for Pharaoh, having had the same dream twice, this is the verse, Bereishis, whatever, it means that the matter has been determined by God, whatever, and God will soon carry it out. This is coming. This is starting right now. Seven good years and then seven bad years. This is the explanation that Yosef gives on the repetition of Pharaoh's dream. However, we don't find in the whole Torah any explanation of why Yosef's dreams are twice. What does it mean? Why two dreams? And basically, again, the same thing. Even if you want to say that the second dream brings up a novelty, something that was not in the first dream, that now even Yaakov and whatever, Rochel, Bila, whomever, the mother who raised Yosef, they were bowing down to Yosef, that's not like not enough explanation. It could have been brought in the first dream, and that's it. You just have one dream, everybody's bowing down to you, and that's it. Why do you need two dreams for this? So this is the basic question that actually triggers the whole teaching, the whole lesson that the Rebbe is going to give us. And of course, what's the lesson? What is there for us? Torah is not just a book of stories. It's not just a book of history. Torah is a book of lessons. Torah, lessons for life. So what's the lesson in these dreams of Pharaoh and Yosef? Now, the first idea the Rebbe brings is let's compare how Yosef's dreams flow without going into the details and how Pharaoh's dream flow. And you will see something very interesting. Pharaoh's dream go from above to below. And Yosef's dreams go from below to above. First of all, Pharaoh dreams on animal kingdom, cows. And then he dreams on plants, on the grain. So we see a descent from the animal kingdom into the vegetable plants kingdom. That's about Pharaoh. That's how he works, and we will see what this means in a minute. Yosef's dreams go the other way around. First of all, he dreams in plants, gathering stalks and so on in the field. And then he dreams of stars. Now you could argue, yes, stars actually are kind of a huge fire thing, whatever. That's not the point. The point is either something in the earth or something in the heavens, meaning some spiritual thing, whatever, in the heavens. By Pharaoh, everything is in the earth. Everything is in the land, either cows or grain. By Yosef, no. He changes. He changes, first of all, in the ground and then in the heavens, so to speak. That's why he's talking about stars. In order to understand what this means for us, so now I'm going to explain a little bit more inside the text, even though we're not going to read the text yet. But the point is like this. This talk, again, delivered by the Rebbe in 1960, this talk is about the difference between Jews and non-Jews. This is what the Rebbe is talking about. Now, if I read to you the Sicha just as it is, you will, whatever, throw me tomatoes and stones and over the internet and so on. So I'm not going to read it as is. I'm going to explain in a different way. Why? Why am I doing this? Because I'm saying this because I have to be honest. So that's what the text talks about. And if you're going to read the text, you're going to say, what did this rabbi came from? And whatever, he explained something is not written in the text. So why am I doing this? Because the Rebbe is talking about klipa, impurity in general. Impurity, as I'll explain in a few minutes. In this particular story, klipa is represented by Pharaoh. He represents impurity in the world. So the point over here is not just, because this is what the text talks about, it's not just Jews against non-Jews and the difference between them. It's a little bit deeper. What happens when a non-Jew gets connected to godliness, to Torah, to mitzvahs? And we explained in different places what happens to the soul, even though we don't know all the details, how it happens, exactly when it happens, and so on. But the Rambam says clearly that there's such a thing as Hasidei Umos Oilon, the pious people among the nations. And Hasidus says clearly they have an elevated soul that comes from a very special place called in Hebrew Klipas Noiga. It's like a brilliant, whatever, shell, a bright shell or something like that. And whatever that means, in practicality, it means holiness. Some power, some potential for holiness. Over here, the Rebbe is not talking about that. Over here, by Pharaoh, he's not talking about holiness. He's not talking about a potential for holiness. No. Not at all. Complete impurity. Absolute impurity. So that's why I'm taking this teaching, which actually, again, the language of the teaching is, look at the difference between Jews and non-Jews. I'm explaining this. Look at the difference between Jews and idolaters. Look at the difference between Bnei Noach and somebody that is still bow down, so to speak, to idolatry, in any form it might be. That's why I'm applying this teaching in a different way. And I explained already why. Because the soul of Bnei Noach is a different thing, has the power, the capacity, the potential for good. Of course, has the potential for non-good, but the Jew also has the potential for non-good, as we see in reality. So that's why I'm explaining this in a different way. I still recommend go read the text. With this introduction, you're not going to get afraid. You're not going to jump off your chair because what you're reading. But bear in mind, he's talking about Pharaoh. He's talking about complete impurity. Okay, having said all of this, again, impurity, how does it work? From above to below, always going down. And purity, how does it work? Always going up, which is actually a Talmudic thing, which is called Ma'ilim V'Kodesh. You always have to grow in sanctity. Now, the Rebbe brings over here two stories, which, again, I repeat this. Both stories talk about the difference between Jews and non-Jews. But you have to bear in mind what kind of non-Jews you're talking about. He's not talking about Bnei Noach. Not at all. He doesn't mention this in the Sicha. It's not the subject. He's talking about, you know, old non-Jews that were pagan and were idolaters and were terrible people. Two stories to understand what a Jew is. And I want to explain this on a Ben Noach. What is a Ben Noach, a Bas Noach? What's the potential they have? Story number one, the Friedrich Rebbe. 1927, the Friedrich Rebbe, the previous Rebbe, was put in jail, basically to be put to death by the Russians, already the communist regime and so on. And there's a whole book just on the stories that he related after leaving jail. It was a miracle in itself, and we celebrate this miracle, the 12th of Tammuz, to the 13th of Tammuz, and so on. Now, one small story he brings over here is, at one point, the Friedrich Rebbe, the Russians knew that he had in his head, they couldn't find any papers, but he had in his head the names of all the religious Jews, Chabad Jews, whatever, that were all around Russia, and we're talking about a big place, all around Russia, holding Judaism, teaching to read to little children, and having synagogues, and making ritual bath places, mikvahs, all around Russia. And then Friedrich Rebbe himself, he sent them, and he supported them, and so on. And of course, Russians wanted to destroy completely Judaism, and by taking the Friedrich Rebbe, if you can take out names and places from him, that's it. You destroy Judaism in Russia. That was their intention. So they tried to take out names from the Friedrich Rebbe, and of course they couldn't take out anything. Nothing at all. Nothing. And they ended up just releasing the Friedrich Rebbe, the previous Rebbe. But at one point, when the Russians did not realize this yet, they pointed a gun on the Friedrich Rebbe, and he was 40-something years, and they told him he was born 1880, so this happened in 1927, he was 47 years old. So they pointed a gun on him, and they told him, look, many people spoke because of this. Like, in your head, many people spoke because of this. So come on. And the Friedrich Rebbe, with lot of coldness. I really recommend reading the book about this, The Liberation of the Siddiq Rebbe. It's an interesting, very interesting book, tough, because he relates stories in the jail and so on. But the Siddiq Rebbe, with a very cold mind, he answered like this: look, your toy frightens somebody that has one world and many gods. Pagan people, many gods. One world and many gods. But I have one god and two worlds. So your toy doesn't frighten me at all. Forget it. I don't care. So this means, and this of course applies also to non-Jews, Bnei Noyach, because the Rambam says clearly there's a portion in the world to come for them and so on. So this means that we strive for, in Hebrew, ruchnius, spirituality. That's what we're looking for. That's what we're looking for. On the other side, Pharaoh and whatever he represents, and impurity and paganism and so on, it doesn't strive for spirituality. The other way around, it strives for more materiality, more earthly things, as we see in his dreams. He started with cows, which is somewhat a little bit more elevated than grain, and he ended up with grains. He's only looking for going down and down, lower and lower, more into his own passions and wants and wills and so on in earthly matters. You can call it whatever you want. You can call it money, you can call it honor, you can call it beauty, whatever you want to call it, doesn't really matter. It's the same thing. Everything is the same. So that's Pharaoh. Yosef is the other way around. He's striving for spirituality. So that's why the Friedrich Rebbe, the previous Rebbe, answered this Russian with the gun: I'm not afraid about this. It doesn't make any difference for me because I'm striving for spirituality. What are you going to do? You're going to kill me? Okay, I'm going to the right place. It's not a problem. I don't care. That's story number one, how we should strive for spirituality and whatever, forget about the material world. The Rebbe mentions, very important, that this doesn't mean that you have to forget completely about the material world. Because if you completely forget about it, you die. You have to eat, you have to take care of your body. And the Rebbe even mentions, and it's interesting, he has a specific novelty on the text of the Rambam. The Rambam says that taking care of the body is Midarkei Hashem. It's one of the paths of God, godliness, whatever. Taking care of the body. You have to be careful. And the Rambam was a doctor, and he brings all kinds of good advices, what to eat, what not to eat, when to eat, and so on. Interesting things for the year 1000. Interesting things. But the Rebbe says, actually, it should say Midarkei Avoidas Hashem. It's one of the paths of serving God. By taking care of your own body, you're actually serving God. And this, there's no one rule for all, one size fits all. There's no such a thing. One person needs to go to the gym, one person needs to walk more, the other one needs to run, the other one needs to eat better, whatever. Each person is different. So there's no one rule for everybody. But the point is, which is a common denominator for everybody, you have to take care of yourself. That's for sure. Take care of yourself. But that doesn't mean, of course, indulging in yourself. I'm going to eat so much. I'm going to work out in the gym every day, the whole day. Okay, when do you pray? I don't have time to pray. I have to work out in the gym. Okay, so you passed a limit, so to speak. So I think it's easy to understand. That's story number one. And don't forget about your body. You have to take care of your body, but don't indulge on it. Story number two, a very tough story that the Rebbe doesn't even quote the whole story over here. It's quoted in a different place, and I'm not going to tell the whole story either. I'm just going to tell the story how the Rebbe brings it over here, which is interesting. There was a time that the Rebbe Maharash was the fourth Rebbe of Chabad. He had two sons, the Razor of Zalman Aaron, who was the oldest son, and the Rashab, Shalom Doiber, who was the youngest son. When the years passed, the youngest son became the fifth Rebbe of Chabad. And the older brother was not a Rebbe. Whatever, was a very special person, was not a Rebbe. And they had arguments and fights and plays and games and many kinds of stories about these two brothers. Okay, at one point, the father, Rebbe Maharash, was talking to his two children about life, about Judaism, about whatever, what's important in life. I don't know exactly, but I suppose they were young, very young children. They were not like grown-ups, they were children. So at some point, the Rebbe Maharash called up his secretary. His secretary was called Ben Zion. That was the name of the secretary, Ben Zion. Who, the truth is, Ben Zion was a very simple person. We tend to think, you know, the Rebbe and the Rebbe talk about this and that, and the son of the Rebbe and the father of the Rebbe, blah, blah, blah. And the people around the Rebbe were very high spiritual people, very knowledgeable and sages themselves. But this guy, Ben Zion, was not that way. He was a very simple person. He didn't know how to learn. He was just a secretary of the Rebbe. That's it. So I'm going to read this because it's very interesting the way it works. So the Rebbe Maharash called his secretary and he asked him, Ben Zion, did you eat today? That was the question of the Rebbe. Imagine the Rebbe, Ben Zion, and the two children looking at this conversation between the Rebbe and Ben Zion. Ben Zion, did you eat today? And Ben Zion answered, yeah. That's all. And the Rebbe asked again, did you eat good? That's what the Rebbe asked. Did you eat good? And Ben Zion answered, what does it mean, good? I'm satisfied. I don't understand the question. I'm satisfied. And the Rebbe continued asking, why did you eat? What's the point over here? What did you eat? And Ben Zion answered, to live. Again, we're talking about a simple person, okay? So don't look for like profound Kabbalistic messages. It was a simple guy. To live. If you don't eat, I die. And the Rebbe continued, and why do you live? This is what the Rebbe asked Ben Zion, why do you live? And Ben Zion answered like this, to be a Jew, I live to be a Jew, and to be able to do what God wants. That was the answer of Ben Zion, and after giving the answer, he gave a sigh. Ah, that was Ben Zion. That's it. Later, the Rebbe Maharash continued talking to his children. Okay, Ben Zion, thank you, and he left. And he spoke to his children, and he said like this, do you see? What's a Jew? A Jew by nature, he eats because he has to live. Otherwise, he dies. And he lives, he has to live to be able to be a Jew and do whatever God wants. And furthermore, it doesn't finish over there. He gives a sigh. Oh, that was Ben Zion. Because he feels inside, am I really holding there? Am I really there? Am I really eating and living and so on to do what God wants from me? Or I'm just, you know, whatever. Every person knows himself, herself, and so on. That was Ben Zion, a very simple person. With this second story, the Rebbe again pushes basically the same idea. Why do we live? What's the whole point over here? To do what God wants from us. And don't fool yourself. Be honest with yourself. Even Ben Zion was a very simple guy. He was an honest person. He knew, I know the answer. I don't know if I'm holding by the answer, but I understand the answer. At least I have to do what God wants from me. Whether I do it or not, okay, that's a different thing. But I understand what I have to do. That was Ben Zion, and this is the general idea that we learn from these two dreams. Why two dreams? By Pharaoh two dreams, by Yosef two dreams. It's true, we did bring before, I'm going back on purpose, we did bring before the answer that Yosef himself gives about why two dreams by Pharaoh. But that's okay, that's fine. Now we're learning a little bit deeper, an explanation, a bit deeper. Two dreams because Pharaoh is going from up down. He's only thinking about material things and so on. And even though I'm not going into the details, forget it. But the story about the Rebbe Maharash doesn't end up with Ben Zion. He was in front of his two children and he called another of his servants, whatever, secretaries, a Russian guy, a non-Jew that he had over there, and he made basically the same questions. He asked the same questions to him. So it's an interesting story. But the point is that Pharaoh's dreams and Pharaoh's life goes from up down, from above to below, from whatever to into more and more materiality. Yosef's dreams, no, from below to above. Always strive for more spirituality. Even if you're not in a very high level and so on, at least give a sigh, at least understand who you are and where you should be, and try your best. That's about why two dreams. Now, what about the details of the dreams? We're not going to dwell upon the details of the dreams of Pharaoh. That's a whole thing in itself, a very interesting thing in itself. There's a whole talk about of the Rebbe about these particular things of Pharaoh. But let's dwell on Yosef's dreams, because today is Parshas Vayeshev. So let's talk about Yosef's dreams and try to understand what was going on. So I brought over here a few details. If you see in Yosef's dreams, what they were doing, they were binding sheaves in the field. That means they were working. There was avoida. In Hebrew, avoida means work. But when, I'm not talking about like physical work, like in the dream, binding sheaves, whatever, in the field. No, I'm talking about spiritual work. If you want sanctity, kedusha, anything that is related to sanctity means there's avoida, there's work. On the other hand, if you look at Pharaoh's dream, he was standing by the Nile and he saw whatever, he was in his chair over there standing or whatever he was doing, watching the cows, watching the grain and so on. He wasn't doing anything. In klipa, in impurity, there's no avoida. Anything in life, anything that comes without toil, as it comes, it goes. And it doesn't really make you a better person. Not at all. And this can be in any aspect of life. Can be in aspects of money, aspects of knowledge, aspects of beauty. There's an interesting story, not related to this exactly, but you know, to understand that we're not talking about money only. There's a story by the Tzemach Tzedek, the third Rebbe of Chabad, with his grandfather, the Alter Rebbe, who founded Chabad movement. And at some point in his life, when he was young, the Alter Rebbe called his grandson and told him, I want to give you a gift. What's the gift? So the gift is, I want to give you all the knowledge I have. That's what the Alter Rebbe told his grandson, the Tzemach Tzedek. I want to give you a gift, all the knowledge I have. And the Tzemach Tzedek thought a little bit about it, and he said, I reject the gift. He didn't want the gift. Why? Because knowledge, you have to work for it. You have to really toil and learn and so on. By much, much later, when the Alter Rebbe already passed away and so on, the Tzemach Tzedek, he said himself, I regret rejecting the gift. Because if I would have taken the gift, I would have been able to learn even more. Like, starting point, Alter Rebbe's knowledge, and now let's learn more. But whatever, too late already. Too late. But the point is, the idea of working, of effort, of toil, in order to connect to something. Godliness means work. There's no work, no godliness. If it came easy, that means it's not 100% quote-unquote pure, good. That's one idea that the Rebbe learns, binding sheaves in the field against versus standing by the Nile. Pharaoh was standing by the Nile. Then the Rebbe explains, okay, what was the avoida? What were they doing? They were binding sheaves in the field. The field means life, the world. The idea of binding sheaves means that the sheaves are all separated, like grain grows in whatever, grass, I don't know what it's called. And you have to put them together and then work on them and so on. But first of all, you have to put them together. So the idea is that the world by itself looks as if it was separated from God. The world itself does not reveal godliness just by itself. You don't see godliness revealed in the world. So you have to go out in the world, quote unquote, out in the field, and work on the world, work with the world and with yourself in order to reveal the unity of godliness in the world. That there's only one God, that everything belongs to God, that everything is godliness and so on. But that's a work. It's not easy. That's what Yosef was doing with his brothers. they were taking, so to speak, a world of fragmentation, a world of separation and so on, and bringing it to unity, gathering together, binding all the sheaves into big packages and so on. That's the avoid that a person should do. So first of all, point number one, you have to make avoida. You have to work. If you don't work, that's not godliness. That's not sanctity. It's klipa. It's impurity. And the second point is, what's the work about? The work is about reuniting the world with God, revealing godliness in everything you think and in yourself, within yourself also. That's what the work is all about. That's one idea divided into two. Again, working, and what's the work about? Then another idea is, Yosef spoke about everybody bowing down to him. What does it mean? It's not enough only to work. It's not enough only to do the right thing and so on. But the truth is, you have to be connected to the Rebbe, to the leader of the generation. Every chassid is going to say that his Rebbe is the leader. So, of course, I'm going to say that my Rebbe is the leader. And I don't have any problem in saying that. But the point is, you have to connect. You have to nullify, bow down, quote unquote. Don't bow down to anybody, but you have to, whatever, bow down your mind to somebody that knows more than you, to your Rebbe. Because that's the only way that you have a guarantee, so to speak, that you're going in the right path. Because if you're not ready to nullify yourself to the Rebbe, to the teachings of Hasidus, of the Torah, whatever, you can explain it in many different realms. If you're not ready to bow down to that, if you're not ready to nullify to that, so you're only nullified to yourself. And almost for sure, you're going in the wrong path. Almost for sure. Because the mind, even though a person can be very smart and very intellectual and so on, also, it's very easy to make mistakes. You know, when you're doing a work in math, in mathematics, a long exercise, even if you just made a very small mistake, very small, just one number, one plus, minus, and so on, in one line, the whole thing is wrong. It's just one small mistake. A point here, a dot there, a comma, whatever. And the whole rest of the thing, you end up with a terrible result. Why? It was just a small mistake. Yeah. And there's another example given to this in Hasidus. It's interesting. Mathematics is my example. But Hasidus says, the Pritika Rebbe used to say, that when you're going in a path, in a road, if you deviate just an inch, just a little bit, a few millimeters from the road, at the beginning, it doesn't really seem to be a deviation. You're still on the road, whatever. And then you're a little bit out of the road. But the more you go on this road, the deviation is longer, bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger until you're really in a different place. Really out of the road and whatever, you know, other things. So these are two general things that the Rebbe extracts from the dream of Yosef. Avoida and... So you have to do avoida, and the avoida is to unite the world with godliness, reveal godliness in the world. Second thing is, you have to be connected to the Rebbe, you have to be connected to Torah, you have to be connected to godliness in order to keep the right path. Third thing, why two dreams by Yosef? Well, why wasn't it enough with one dream? Because the first dream was in the field. The field means this physical world, means people like you and me, trying our best and refining our best and so on, refining ourselves and so on. The second dream is about the stars, the moon, the sun, the stars, very holy, lofty, spiritual things, heavenly things. The Rebbe brings the idea of the dream of Yaakov. Yaakov dreams in Parshas Vayetzeh of a stairs that is really into the ground and goes up into the heavens. So the field represents the low part of the stairs, really into the ground. And the second dream represents really into the heavens, really high, lofty, and so on. And a person might think that when you're in a very high and lofty spiritual level, you don't need to be nullified. That's why the second dream doesn't bring any avoida, any... No, it just brings one detail. Everybody's bowing down to me, says Yosef. Yosef represents the Rebbe, the Tzaddik, the righteous person of the generation, whatever. So everybody's bowing down to me. Why? Because even when you're in a very lofty and high level, you still have to remember that you have to be nullified to the Tzaddik, to the righteous person of the generation. It's not enough, your own level. Even if you're in a lofty level, even in that case. That's why by Yosef we have two dreams. By Pharaoh we have two dreams to teach you that the klipa, impurity, if you really disconnect from godliness, disconnect from Sheva Mitzvah, seven commandments, or whatever you want to say it, so you go down. And it's really down into materiality, into yourself, into nothingness. You have to strive for spirituality, go up. By two dreams by Yosef, it's a completely different message. You have to strive for spirituality, as we explained before, and you have to work, and he has to be in the field by uniting the world with godliness. And even in high levels, you still have to remember godliness. This is basically the ideas, even though we didn't read so much, we just read one story. These are the basic ideas that the Rebbe brings in this Sicha.
Again, in this particular talk, the Rebbe is pointing out the difference between Jews and non-Jews. But again, he's talking about the non-Jews, the way they were in Pharaoh's time, the way they were in the Rebbe Marash's time, we're talking about Russia, in the 1880s, in the 1850s, and then the way they were in the communist regime in the 1920s, and so on. So we're talking about not necessarily B'nai Noyach, not necessarily B'nai Noyach. In order to point out an interesting difference and to close the idea of the Sicha, there's another story by the Alter Rebbe. And interestingly, this happened in 1798. So we do see one very important point, and this is brought down in many places, that in all generations, there were righteous non-Jews. We tend to think that it's everything or nothing. Like today, people know about the seven mitzvahs, so people are Hasidim umos ha'olam and the pious among the nations and so on. And what was it before? Oyveis mi, they didn't know how to read, they didn't know how to, whatever, anything, to the point that the Shulchan Aruch, the Code of Jewish Law says, don't cut your hair with a non-Jew because he might kill you. This is the kind of people we're talking about many, many years ago, okay? Today you can go cut your hair, whatever, and nobody's going to kill you unless you got punked in that moment, a crazy guy, but it's not so common, whatever. In those days, in the days of the Shulchan Aruch, 1500s, even before that, people were in a different level. Let's put it this just in these words. So every single generation, there were righteous non-Jews, Shem, Eiver. We do find them even in the Torah. Now, the story by the Alter Rebbe, I'll make it very short, even though it's a long story. This week is Yutes Kislev, it's the 19th of Kislev, which is the day of liberation of the Alter Rebbe. It's a very holy and lofty day that Hasidim celebrate, in Chabad mainly, we celebrate by learning, by davening, praying, and so on. But the story of Yutes Kislev, which happened in 1798, is a long story. I just want to say one detail about an interesting non-Jew. The Alter Rebbe was in prison, and everybody knew the Alter Rebbe was a special person, special rabbi. Why was he in prison? What happened? Okay, so you can find online easily. Look, story of 19th of Kislev, and you're going to find so many details, you don't need me to tell you that. But one story, which is very interesting, which is also over there, but I just want to point it out. That's why I bring it, even though it's famous. Everybody knew that the Alter Rebbe was a special rabbi, not a simple, not a common rabbi. So one of the ministers of the Tsar, he came to the prison of the Alter Rebbe. It was a very small place. Until today, they have it like a museum over there in Russia, in Petersburg. So he came in dressed like a simple person and presented himself in front of the Alter Rebbe and told him, I want to ask you a question. Okay, so ask you a question. The question was a very simple question. And the question is like this. We do find in the beginning of the Torah,
when the man, when the first man ate from the fruit he didn't have to eat and so on, he got scared and he hid himself. And he heard God going around the Gan Eden, the paradise, whatever that means, I don't know, and he got scared. So God started looking for him and said, where are you, Ayeka, where are you? And first man said, oh, I saw you coming and I was afraid, so I hid and so on. I didn't know. So God asks him, did you eat from the fruit I told you not to eat? Like, you think I'm a fool? I know where you are, I know who you are, and so on. So the question is, and the conversation continues, but the question is, if God knows everything, if God knows, he knew where Adam was, whatever how you call it, why did you ask him, where are you? Ayeka, where are you? That was the question that this minister had. Why did God ask the first man, where are you? He knew where he was. And the Alter Rebbe answers, Rashi, commentary of Rashi, explains that this was just a way of starting a conversation. Like when people say, how are you? I'm fine, okay, let's talk. How are you? I'm fine. It wasn't really talking. It was just like, hello, a conversation. And then you talk. And the minister answered, I know what Rashi says. I learn Torah with Rashi. He knew. He wasn't a simple person. He knew pretty well what the Torah says, what Rashi says. I want to know what you say. This is what the minister asked the Alter Rebbe. The Alter Rebbe looked at him and he said like this. The question, Ayeka, where are you, is a question that God asks to every single human being in the face of the earth. To everybody. And when a person is, and he mentioned a number of years, which I don't know which number he mentioned, but it was the number of years that this minister had. So let's put 40 years old, whatever. So when a person is 40 years old, and God is asking him, Hayeka, where are you? What are you doing for good in the world? The person has to know that that question is for you. What are you doing with your life? That's what the Alter Rebbe told this person. And this person ended up being very important in the liberation of the Alter Rebbe. So he realized that the Rebbe is really a special guy. So God is asking us, each one of us, Ayeka, where are you? Every single day, a person should think, where am I right now? What am I doing for Mashiach to come, for to connect to godliness, and so on? And this is basically the same idea, not exactly, but basically the same idea the Rebbe brings down in this talk. A person has to strive for holiness. Like, where are you? Just into material things. That's the only thing you think about. And a person has to strive for doing good in the world. And this hopefully is our mission, our work, to reveal godliness in the world. And this hopefully, with our work, will bring down Mashiach speedily in our days.